According to his promise, we are looking for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Therefore, beloved, since you look for these things, be diligent to be found by him in peace, spotless and blameless, and grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Our growth comes through the Scriptures. Join me, if you would, in Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4 tonight. I want to kind of start off with a verse there and then go to 2 Timothy 2:2 and kind of use tonight how do you resume something that you stopped more than a year ago, right? So PMW has been suspended for some time. We made 2017 a focus on our prayers. We made 2017, we had other things that we were doing, for example, the Greek class that we restarted, other things. So we've been away from this 7:30 hour for a while, and I'm happy to have it back, and it's good to have it back, and we're going to jump right into it. I'm going to use tonight as an introduction and then assign some reading and let you know if you don't have the books to read yet, we'll work with that until you can get the books, and that way we can get going. Let me open with a word of prayer, though. Father, I thank you for tonight. I thank you for the blessings we have to assemble together. I call upon your faithfulness, Father, as we study to show ourselves approved, trusting in you, Father, to keep my voice one more hour. And just thank you for all that you do. We thank you, we praise you, Father, in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. All right. PMW. What is PMW? It's a Pastor's Ministry Workshop. That's right. It's a TLA. I'm very fond of TLAs. Do you like TLAs? Those are three-letter acronyms, all right? And so PMW is a TLA, okay? It stands for Pastor's Ministry Workshop. And we started these years ago. We started these back in 2004. And I like the term workshop because workshop is more interactive. It's not a lecture, although I do a lot of lecturing. It is also an interactive. So in this hour, there's a lot more openness, there's a lot more Q&A, there's a lot more back and forth. I will be asking you questions because much of what we do in this hour is we review reading assignments that have been given the week before. And we have the opportunity to field questions. We have the opportunity to get the Bible software up and running. We get to go deeper into passages maybe than we're able to do on other occasions. So that's the point. PMW was designed for our seminary students, but it does not exclude anybody. And so depending on the topic, we may have tons of people that attend. When we had a church history class, for example, we had 30 people here. There were tons of people that wanted to have a church history class. And they're not part of the seminary. They're not training to be pastors someday. They just were interested in the topic. Or we also did, years ago, we did one on Christian finances. We used Larry Burkett material. And again, it was a week of reading, and then it was discussion. It was exploration of the Scriptures. To see if these things are so. And so we've done that. Let me just show you the website. Of course, this is austinbiblechurch.com. And when you go to audio recordings, on the right-hand side is a sub-menu that a lot of times gets ignored, but I go there a lot, and I want to bring it to your attention because it includes Ministry Workshop. It includes a heading there for Ministry Workshop. And when you open that up, then you get a long list of stuff that goes back a long, long time, all right? And in fact, it goes back almost to those earliest of days. We didn't have MP3s, we didn't have a website. In fact, one of the things that happened when Cliff started training for the ministry is he built us a website. And we still have kind of the legacy of that in a lot of ways. And so you have these topics. You have Christian finances, church history, all the Grace Notes courses we've done in the past, intermediate charismatology, which was a more in-depth study than we did in basics. In basic doctrinal studies, you had category 10, which was charismatology, the study on spiritual gifts. Well, in the PMW hour, we actually went into that on a deeper basis, expanding, taught four classes on that, expanding the gifts, the ministries, the effects, a more fuller view on that. Anyway, all of these classes are sitting there. So if you were in Indiana, for example, and you weren't here at the time that we did these classes, they're just sitting there. You can go get them. You can go listen to them. And I think for Geisler, not only do we have audio, we have video. And so for Geisler, week by week, not only can you have a chapter reading assignment, but you can also watch the video. You can go through the class that we taught the last time we taught the class, so that this next time we teach the class, We don't have to reinvent the wheel, we don't have to redo everything that's already been done. We can take advantage of what's already been done, and we can go beyond that. We can go deeper. We can actually explore things that we ran out of time in the past to be able to go through before. So I encourage you to just familiarize yourself with this menu. You'll notice there was a church history class, and then there's a 2014 church history class. They're both available if you want to listen to either or both. The MP3s are there. Okay? Yes, sir?
What text did you use? Did you use...
We used Earl Cairns' Christianity Through the Centuries.
What they used in Tyndale.
Tyndale used that? Yeah, Moody uses that. There's a lot of schools that use that. It's a great single-volume church history for a single-semester course. And then, of course, Grace Notes has Philip Schaff, and you can really plunge into... And maybe we ought to do that on an upcoming occasion. I taught a class on the church constitution, and I don't know that we'll repeat this at some point, but there were six classes there. And when you expand these, by the way, not only does it unfold the MP3s, but if there are PDFs, not all of them have PDFs, but if there are PDFs that go with them, then they're going to be posted there as well at the bottom of the page there. But this was back in 2012, 2013, as we were leading up to the edit that we did on our church constitution, when we went through and created a revision with improvements to our church constitution, allowing for plurality of elders, for example, allowing for deaconesses, for example, the different changes that we made to our constitution as far as our organizational structure is concerned. Anyway, that class is available. An evangelism class that we taught, I think we ought to do another one, and I think the next time we do one, I won't be the teacher for that. It might be that we'll have some trained evangelists that'll be the teacher for that, okay? And so stay tuned the next time evangelism comes up in our docket for ministry workshop classes. We've done Geisler systematic theology before, and we're going to be doing Geisler again. And in fact, this is what I'm kind of eager to jump into right away. So starting next week, I want to start in on Geisler Volume 1 to start working with you guys on Geisler. I think Bill needs it. I think all of us would be refreshed to go through it, even if we've had it before. Lewis has had it before, but you always learn when you go through it again, and when you go through it a second time and a third time. It's kind of shocking when you pick up things that you didn't know on the third time through, and you think, how did I not pick that up on the first two times through? Also, what I want to do when we get to the point where we're talking about the New Covenant, I want to supplement Geisler with Cone, David Cone, and his volume on the New Covenant. It's very new. It just came out in 2014, I think about 2014, 2015 maybe, and it is marvelous. It's a book I wish I would have written 30 years ago, and it's got David Cone, it's got Tommy Ice, it's got Robbie Dean, it's got George Gunn, it's got a lot of the faithful men that we know, maybe... I don't remember if Andy Woods had a chapter in it, but a lot of men have chapters in it. And it's a marvelous description of the New Covenant, and it's an excellent supplement to Geisler, because I think it remedies the things that are going to be deficient in Geisler for the New Covenant. Anyway, Geisler's monumental. It's four volumes, and so we broke it up. We didn't just slug it through all four volumes. We took 10 weeks, right, 20 weeks. We took a period of time to do each volume, and then we took a break. And then says, okay, let's put Geisler on the shelf, and now let's relax. Let's do a Grace Notes course. Let's do Doctrine 100. And then we did 10 classes on that, and then we went back and did another section on Geisler. And so we kind of broke it up that way and provided a time of refreshment and so forth. We may do that again. I'm going to gauge it based upon how the students are doing and what we're learning and how we're growing and what I think we do. Maybe we will slug through all four volumes in one chunk. I don't know. But the fact that we've done it before and that the videos are posted is going to be useful. Now, I need, before we really, we need to get these linked because they're not here yet. And Jacob needs to do that. So note to self, talk to Jacob about linking these. It is helpful if the Geisler videos are embedded right here on these pages. Okay, and we've only successfully done that once, and that was when we did a philosophy of counseling class. Remember this one? We did a look at that skinny guy. All right, we did a philosophy of counseling class, and the MP3s are there, 13 of them. The PDFs are there, two of them, but then also the videos are there. And the videos are there and they're actually linked. They're embedded on that page. All right, so you don't have to go over to YouTube. You don't have to find the hard to find Austin Bible Church YouTube videos that are on my brother's private channel. All right, I mean, you can find them that way. Google will get you there. You can put in Austin Bible Church systematic theology and it'll all come up. But I think it would be better if they were embedded in our pages as well as, you know, where they're sitting on YouTube. All right. Archaeology, plan of God, technology tools. Anyway, these are all the courses. And we may add to these. There may be a course we've never done before, and we decide, hey, you know what, we want to do that, like homiletics, okay? Homiletics, are those classes, the 15 minutes I gave tonight, those are going to start showing up here. There'll be a homiletics header that will start to show up. In fact, there it is, homiletics. Look at that. We've got a crack team in the recording booth. And homiletics is already sitting there in the ministry workshop folder, sitting in there in that directory. And we've had one class, and that was tonight. And so they will start to be added there week by week by week as we proceed through this experiment. So, any questions on that? Yes, sir. Do we have a syllabus? Right, right. Yeah, the question is, do we have a syllabus that we hand to candidates at the beginning of their training so that they know what to expect or what the courses are, the answer is yes and no. Mostly no. I have created, and you created one, I've created a couple. Daryl Darr created one at one point. I think Al might have even created a draft on one. Over the years, I've made attempts to put that on paper, and I've never been happy with any of them. And so we've never finalized one, we've never printed one, we've never put one in somebody's hand. And that is that's a deficiency that could be remedied, that ought to be remedied, so that someone considering what the next 4 years of their life is going to be like will have. I mean, that's a picture right there. You know what the next 4 years of your life is going to look like, but it's more than that because there's nothing there about Greek and Hebrew, and that. That would be good to instill fear on the new. And let me address that too. By the way, part of why I struggle with it is that we're not a graduate school, we're not a formal institution, and I don't want to put something on paper that myself or any of the students feels like they have to follow that, and if they veer off course, that they have to change their major or drop from the school or withdraw or anything like that. Because there may be some men, we use 4 years as a ballpark figure, there may be some men that finish in three, some men that finish in seven, there may be some men that 12 years later haven't finished yet. And I'm cool with that, actually, because that's the nature of what we do here in a local church training ministry. And so, yeah, we can discuss that to a greater length. Bill?
When I did a couple of classes...
Do we need the microphone for this? This might be better so that we don't...
I'll become the runner.
You can become the runner when you're done. Well, that's the price you pay for going first.
When I did a couple of classes at Tyndale, of course, you know, they had the syllabus. Mm-hmm. It actually made me really excited. I really enjoyed which was kind of good and kind of not, because it made me want to kind of rush through one class, mm-hmm. because I knew what the next class was going to be.
Right.
But I found that very beneficial just for my own personal edification or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
My question, as far as Geisler goes, will there be questions like you had the several years ago when you did PMW, when you did Geisler? Will there be questions?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The bulk of PMW is Q&A. We do a lot of Q&A. We do a lot of interactive.
Well, I'm talking about like how, you know, you had a forum and you had to answer all these questions, you know, as a student.
Oh, quizzes, yes.
Quizzes, sorry.
Yes. In fact, Al Dowdy is the author of most of those quizzes.
Yeah.
So not every chapter got a quiz, but now that we're doing it again, we have a chance to remedy that and to provide quizzes for the chapters we missed the last time, and maybe to go back and repair some of the earlier quizzes that could be improved upon.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, quizzes are good. All right, microphone back to Lewis then.
As you recall, there's a caution as to which Geisler to buy. The single volume version had missing sections.
Yeah, I don't recommend the single volume. There is an all-in-one single volume that combines four into one. But by doing that, they say it's unabridged, but they lie. It is not unabridged. There are appendixes in each of the four volumes, and that combined edition does not contain those appendixes. So I do recommend the four volumes. Also, it's available in Logos. So if you use Logos Bible software and you don't want to get the print book, get the Logos edition, and that is more useful anyway. Yes, sir?
I actually had the all-in-one volume. Mm-hmm. Didn't realize that it was abridged. However, another downside is if you can't see, if you have a hard time seeing, it wouldn't be a good idea to get...
Oh, tiny print.
Oh, it's...
Yeah, very tiny print.
What was the review on it? It was a good read for a believer with good eyes or something like that, or something to that effect.
Right. Yeah, it says tiny print. So I do not recommend the single volume. I recommend the four individual volumes. And that's fine, because we're going to go through them volume by volume. Anyway, we may take a break in between the four volumes. And so, especially if there's an expense involved, or if that's an issue in terms of saving up for those individual volumes, then you'll have time to do that.
The library, does it still have two or three sets?
The library, I think, has two sets, maybe three. I have a set, although I noticed I loaned out my volume one and I never got it back.
They're actually a lot cheaper now than they were when they first come out. I think it's like $20 a book now or something.
Sometimes
like
you can find them at half price books too.
Okay.
Yeah. So, if I loaned my volume one to somebody and you still have it, there'll be an amnesty program where you can return it with no questions asked. You could just leave it up here on the pulpit when no one's looking and appreciate that. In any event, let me share. Yes, sir. We can get a microphone over to you.
Just a statement about the books. When Deb and I ordered our books,
mm-hmm.
we just Googled the Library of Congress number,
mm-hmm.
and came up with a lot of sources, and we got them for, I don't think we paid more than $10 for any one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's, especially like at Amazon, you go through the used marketplace, and you can get some. I expect there's a lot of folks that bought Geisler and read half of volume one and then gave up on it. So you can probably get some good, great condition books like that.
But the warning is a lot of them come like underlined and dog-eared, and
well,
personally for me.
Yeah. I asked you to turn to Acts 4. I had a reason for that. There's a madness to my method, or a method to my madness. I'm not sure which. Acts 4:13. And this is a context where the Sanhedrin has arrested Peter and John. And they have problems. They're starting to hate Peter and John just like they hated Jesus. And here's Peter and John preaching Jesus. And anyway, they get thrown in jail. And there's some other threats and things that happen here. But in Acts 4:13, as they observed the confidence of Peter and John, and understood that they were uneducated and untrained men. Those expressions form the basis of what we're doing here tonight, and form the basis of my heart, my philosophy for training in a local church. And this is how I was trained. Ralph trained me in a local church, and I've trained men in a local church, and we're still training. And that's the nature of it. uneducated, untrained man. That's a total lie. But from their perspective, that's what they thought. These Sanhedrin, you know, PhDs looked at these Galilean fishermen and said, you know, country bumpkin, you know, rednecks, hillbillies, hicks, you know, these losers. Who do they think they are? They're uneducated and untrained men. They're agrammatos, or the plural agrammatoi, and idioti, idiots. So they're illiterate idiots, okay? What's worse than being an idiot? Being an illiterate idiot, okay? And they're both. In the view of these self-righteous, arrogant, unbelieving Bible scholars, okay? Remember, this is the crowd that did not follow Christ, okay? And so as we look at this and we observe confidence, as they observed the confidence of Peter and John, and recognize, you know what? Going to their school is not the only way to do it. And it goes on to talk about how they were amazed and began to recognize them as having been with Jesus. And that right there, my friend, that's the credential you want. You want to be recognized as having been with Jesus. You want to be recognized by brothers and sisters that Jesus Christ has a calling on your life, and that he has given you a gift, and that he's leading you in ministry, and that you have a boldness, a confidence in standing before the people of God and saying, "Thus saith the Lord." And that comes about as you live in the Word of God and as you are following the example of older believers, the example of your elders, the example of your pastor, the example of your deacons, the example that we have in this body, all right? And there's a huge advantage to that. And so we've done word studies. I won't go back into it tonight, but this term here for uneducated is your agrammatos. And I like that, agrammatos. You have the alpha privative in front of grammatos. And so it's literally unlettered, unlettered. So if you are learned, if you are a scholar, then you have been lettered. You know your letters. You are literate. And if you haven't, then you're unlettered. You're illiterate. And I like that as a play on words, because unlettered actually relates to the fact that, of course, when you graduate, when you're ordained, when you leave here, when you accept a pulpit, when you become the pastor of Corpus Christi Bible Church, for example, or Lost Pines Bible Church, or wherever the Lord takes you, is you will be unlettered. You're not going to have business cards printed off with PhD after your name, or THM, or MDiv, or any of those other acronyms that you get at Schaefer or Dallas or Tyndale or other places that you may go. All right? You're going to walk out of here with unlettered. Okay? No letters after your name. And so, agrammatos is a nice expression there. And then for untrained, the term is idioti, right? Where we get the English idiot. And an idioti, to the Greeks, you are either skilled or you were an idiot, meaning you are either trained for a task or you were an amateur, right? So didn't matter if it was a trained carpenter, a trained soldier, a trained sailor, a trained nurse, a trained, whatever the field was, geometry, whatever the field was, once you were trained in it, then you had that proficiency, and without that training, you were an amateur, you were an idiot in that field. See, and of course, neither one of these are true. Peter and John are not uneducated, and they're not untrained. They had 3.5 years with Jesus Christ. They had the best seminary there's ever been on this earth. No one else had a seminary like Peter, James, and John, like the 12 apostles, right? The God himself became flesh and dwelt among us, and he headed up their seminary. And so, in any event, if we've never had a formal written syllabus, we've never had a title assigned to our name, we've never designed a website that said, "Welcome to Agrammatos Cemetery," seminary, or Agrammatos Academy, okay? Plato had the academy, right? And that's where we get our word academy, from Plato's school. So we've never put, "Welcome to the illiterate and idiot students." But I've never lost track of that as a concept, because I think it reaches the point of why we're here. that people will recognize that these are believers, these are brothers, these are sisters, these are communicators, helpers, servers, whatever your gift is, whatever your ministry field is. Wow, Jesus Christ, and these are men that have been with Jesus Christ. They have been trained, they have been educated, and there's just nothing else like it. So I give you that. Also, 2 Timothy 2:2, the responsibility to train comes to every pastor of every flock. The things you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And so we're not just teaching you to know something, we're teaching you to teach something. And we're passing that on. As Ralph trained me, as I train you, you're going to go into your own flock and you're going to train men that I don't know. You know, and after I'm dead and gone, you're going to be training men. And that's how it goes. And then those men are going to be training men, and that's how it goes. Okay? This passage proves that Peter was not the first pope. All right? Paul doesn't tell Timothy, hey, if you find a young man that might be a pastor, then send him to Rome where he can have apostolic succession and the proper laying on of hands, so that he has a legitimate priesthood, so that he can do the mystical mumbo-jumbo with the bread and the wine. Okay? There's none of that. Okay? You train faithful men, they're going to train faithful men, they're going to train faithful men, and it's just going to spread. And that's what we're doing here. Okay? Yes, sir.
When a person candidates as a pastor, he's going to have trouble explaining.
We need a microphone.
I dropped it.
You dropped the microphone?
Yeah.
It was a mic drop. Here we go. Chris has it.
Oh, thank you. When a person candidates as a pastor, he's going to be meeting a pastoral selection committee that mm-hmm. doesn't understand these things.
Mm-hmm. They may or they may not.
Well, I believe few will to begin with. Mm-hmm. So he'll have to be prepared to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are so used to looking at the credentials mm-hmm. that some have to present. Now, Dan, in candidating at Corpus Christi, mm-hmm. had probably what we would call an unusual opportunity to spend a lot of time teaching down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he could demonstrate that way that he knew who he was talking about
mm-hmm.
and that he could dissect Scripture and present the truth from the Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Not always will you have that be given that amount of time to present yourself. So anyway, the solution to this particular question is something to build into the pastor ministry workshop: is how to present this idea when you're candidating.
Right. No, I agree. That's a good suggestion, because we've had very good experiences in several cases, and we've had some rough experiences in other cases. And it helps if they know us. It helps if we have a connection with these churches. I think, for example, when we got Horseshoe Bay off the ground, and you went out there, and I went out there, and Cliff and other teachers went out there, and Glenn went out there, Jacob went out there. So we send not just one teacher, but an assortment of teachers in some cases. In Corpus Christi, Lewis went down there, Bob went down there, Dan went down there, I went down there, Cliff. Cliff didn't go down there, but they listened to Cliff's MP3s on the website. In the case of Kansas City, for example, I flew to Kansas City, Dan flew to Kansas City. We had those opportunities. In Tulsa, we used more of the website and emails so people could listen to messages that way. I think the recognition... What the flocks are hungry for, the flocks are hungry to be fed. And the opportunities, when the Lord opened those doors, for example, I got to speak in a Bible conference in Kansas City, and not only was I teaching in the conference, but also introducing the fact that we have a school here, and we have student pastors, and we have training. They said, well, tell me more. How does that work? And what do those men get trained to do? And so that introduces it to those other congregations in other parts of the country. That may be another way too, is to host conferences here. We want to host a conference here in 2018, and to attend conferences elsewhere when they're being hosted. That gets more exposure for our student body, for our alumni. I think too, the Corpus Christi example is useful, because they had a whole committee together, and they contacted Schaefer, Dallas, Tyndale, a couple others I shouldn't mention that aren't exactly like-minded with us. Anyway, they contacted, and they didn't get they got resumes, they got lists, they didn't get Bible teachers. We sent them Bible teachers, and they were thankful for that. And they were very thankful for that. Brian told me, he says, I can't tell you thank you enough, because these schools were sending us resumes, you sent us Bible teachers. and the neat thing was, again, there was an assortment. There was four or five of us that went down there. And they learned, wow, face-to-face. They wanted face-to-face teaching. They wanted that blessing. Not because they were just listening to their department, you know, to a dead pastor's recorded messages. And you know, you listen to a dead guy. You know, it makes a difference if you got a live Bible teacher right there. So, microphone over on the other side, please. And so that is a thing, and it may be, and people have to know this. If you start training on this basis, there will be closed doors. There will be pulpit committees that will look at you and say, "Well, until you have your THM, we're not going to consider you." And then you just say, "Well, thank you," and that's not where the Lord's putting you. But I think the Lord uses his Peters, he uses his Pauls, he uses, you know, men like Paul with impeccable academic credentials, men like Peter with none. And God uses both in the different places. So. Yes, sir.
When you say that they sent, the other seminaries sent them resumes, mm-hmm. I'm sure that a pulpit committee kind of explained a little, either in writing or on the phone, what they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And did they not make the candidates available to come and speak, or?
No. They gave them lists, they gave them names, they got resumes, and then it was totally up to the pulpit committee there in Corpus Christi. If there was one that they were interested in, they could reach out, contact him, try to make a contact, try to bring him in, and on that basis. But it was not as proactive. It was left totally in the pulpit committee's side to reach out and try to bring those people in. Okay, Lewis?
I think I can say this with a straight face. I don't think anyone's questioned my knowledge of all the places I've been.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tell them what it's about, and that's good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there you go.
I mean, to be honest, I have, you know, a Grace Notes associate. You know, I don't know how much that sways people, but I mean, I'll just tell them. I'm in the Austin Bible pastor, and that's good enough.
You know what? In some cases, though, Bill's next, please. We've actually encountered, there have been pulpit committees that have been totally burned. They brought men in that have impeccable credentials from what used to be solid seminaries. And they think, wow, here's a guy. And they find out he's not dispensational. He doesn't even believe in eternal security anymore. He's totally out in the woods on his theology. He no longer teaches a premillennial, a pre-tribulational rapture. And by the resume, they would have never have dreamed that. They would have never dreamed that at all. And so when you've got hungry sheep that want to be fed, they want to know, is this a man that can study and teach? Is this a man that can exegete from Greek and Hebrew? Is this a man that's going to feed the flock? And that's becoming, I think, it's going to get more and more pronounced in the coming years. That's going to become more and more the criteria. Is this a man that can feed my soul? And as far as the other, they are going to start caring less and less if he has books on the shelf, and the, you know, on the market, if he's on the radio, if he has all that other stuff.
I know this was before I went to Tyndale a little bit, and before I found Austin Bible Church, I kind of went out on the website and Googled like church jobs, mm-hmm. pastor jobs or whatever, just to kind of get an idea. I was like, okay, what should I go to Tyndale for? And I was disgusted and appalled at some of these ads that I saw of churches needing pastors, because you can read through it, and very little did they ever mention God or the Bible. Yeah. It read more like they were advertising for a Fortune 500 company and they needed a CEO.
Right, right.
And it was, so that has a lot to...
Well, a lot of churches these days are structured that way. So you have your senior pastor, you have an executive pastor, you have an associate pastor, you have a counseling pastor, you've got a youth pastor. And so everything is very much structured like on a business model with different things. I like to use John chapter 10, and this is part of what we do in not only preparing a man to candidate, but also to prepare a pulpit committee to have a candidate come in. And I teach this. I've taught it here several times. I've taught it in Kansas City. I've taught it in other pulpits, Spokane. The whole idea of the good shepherd and my sheep hear my voice, and the recognition, the difference between a shepherd and a hireling, I think goes to address a lot of what we're talking about with respect to a corporate approach or a shepherding approach. And when Jesus says, I am the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He says in verse 14, I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. So how do you know when God is bringing you your new shepherd? How do you know that this is the will of Jesus Christ? See, I believe that Jesus Christ is the head of the church. What do you think? I believe that Jesus Christ walks in the midst of the golden lampstands. What do you think? I believe Jesus Christ holds the stars in his right hand. What do you think? So do you think Jesus do you think Jesus is a slave to what our pulpit committees decide to do? Because the pulpit committee picks out this guy, and Jesus says, well, that's not the guy I wanted, but okay. And so he holds that star in his right hand and just kind of goes along with the program. Or, as Jesus Christ is the head of the church, has he already assigned the shepherd to follow the shepherd that he removed? I believe that he has sovereign control. When he opens doors, when he closes doors, when he takes a man out of a pulpit, he already knows who he's going to put into that pulpit. And so on this basis then of my sheep knowing me, when is it then that they can hear the shepherd's voice? And how then does this happen that that they hear my voice? And so verse 16 speaks of this. I have other sheep which are not of this fold. I must bring them also. They will hear my voice. And hearing the voice of the shepherd is key. It even backs up, even in the earlier message of the doorkeeper here, when he says, they know his voice. That's verse 4, verses 3 and 4 there. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. A stranger they simply will not follow, but they will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. And it's a marvelous thing, and I've seen videos on this. I've heard illustrations on this in parts of the world where this still happens today, okay, not Jollyville, but, you know, there are places that have flocks. And you know, the shepherds can bring them in for the night, four or five shepherds with four or five flocks, bring them into the same sheepfold. They can leave them there for the night within the walls of that sheepfold. There's a doorkeeper that's there. There's a night watchman that's there. While the shepherd gets the night off, he goes home to miss the shepherd. And, you know, but then he comes back in the morning. They all come back in the morning. Four or five shepherds show up in the morning, and one by one, as the doorkeeper opens, and each shepherd calls his sheep. Isn't that amazing? Of course, they're all mixing and, you know, mingling and whatever sheep do in the fold at night. But when the shepherd calls them out in the morning, the only ones that come out are his flock. And so shepherd one takes his out, and then shepherd two takes his out, and shepherd three takes his out. It's a marvelous, marvelous thing. God built that into to sheep. And then taught it here in John chapter 10. I find that extraordinary. No, I believe that this goes with 1 Peter chapter 5. And in 1 Peter, Peter learned this. Of course, he was there to hear this message in John 10. But when we talk about elders in 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter here doesn't call himself the first pope. He calls himself a fellow elder. And he's talking to his fellow elders. And he tells them to shepherd the flock of God. Remember, it's not your flock, it's God's flock. Shepherd the flock of God among you, because not every sheep on the planet is yours, but the ones that have been assigned to you are the ones you have to shepherd. Exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God. Not for sordid gain, but with eagerness. Nor yet as lording it, take kurios, the noun, and make it a verb. You know, don't lord over anybody. You're not the Lord. What are you lording? Okay, the pastor's not a tyrant. Nor yet is lording it over those, and I love this, those allotted to your charge. Those allotted to your charge. Now that to me is powerful. That to me is profound. That addresses everything from hearing the shepherd's voice in John 10 of Jesus Christ walking in the lampstands, holding the stars in his right hand, to everything else as far as how do local churches operate within the overall umbrella of the body of Christ, within the church universal. nor yet as though lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. Okay? So then here's the question, allotted to your charge. And just ask yourself this. Who did the allotting? Okay? So I'm a sheep. I've been allotted to somebody. Who allotted me? Did I allot myself? Wait a minute. Who's head of the church? Say, he walks in the midst of the lampstands. He holds the stars in his right hand. And he allots every sheep to every flock as he so desires. And so ultimately what it comes down to me, the will of God for what church do I belong in is asking myself, to whose charge have I been allotted? What under-shepherd has Jesus Christ entrusted my soul to be shepherded? Right? Because we have been entrusted. My soul has been entrusted. And they will give an account. That's why in Hebrews 13 it says, obey your leaders as those who will give an account. Hebrews 13, by the way, if you want to look that up. And so those allotted to your charge, that's huge. People, they go church shopping, they visit, they have criteria, they want to find out, well, what's the Sunday school like? What's the music like? What's the nursery like? What's the singles ministry like? What's, you know, what are my prospects for dating here? I mean, they've got all kinds of criteria. Is it close to work? I don't want to drive too far. They got a long laundry list. What kind of bowling league do they have? They got a long laundry list of stuff that they use as a criteria for what church they attend. And all of that is garbage in my view. It all comes down to this one question. I have been allotted to a shepherd's charge. Whose shepherd have I been allotted to? Right? Who has been charged with shepherding my soul? And whose voice am I hearing? If the sheep hear my voice, whose voice am I hearing? And then when that resonates, when I hear that voice and I know, wow, this is a shepherd that feeds. This is a shepherd that's feeding me. I can grow here. This is where God has put me. Okay, everything else is just icing on the cake. That's the will of God right there. And so I put that as a criteria. And this is what I teach. And I taught this in Corpus as a conference. I taught this in Kansas City as a conference. It really helps. It preps the pulpit committee. It preps the congregation. Hey, maybe instead of reviewing resumes, I should be listening for a voice. I should be considering who I have been allotted to. What is the... Hebrews 13, 15, those who will give an account. Hebrews 13, 17, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. They are accountable to Jesus Christ for how they shepherd my soul. So connect that with 1 Peter 5, and I think you can do some marvelous things there. All right, back over to this side. Maybe we need a different microphone runner. Yeah.
I'll just hold it.
All right.
To that extent, does there ever come a time where, okay, for example, you as a pastor of a flock,
mm-hmm.
are you still allotted to Ralph? Or is no. there a time to where that just ceases?
Yeah, the only sheep that are not allotted are the shepherds themselves. That's right. Yeah, so every sheep on the planet should be allotted to a shepherd somewhere. Otherwise, they're sheep without a shepherd. All right? And the only one that's not allotted is the one that's held to the right hand of Jesus Christ. So in a sense, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want, right? But to be held in the right hand of Jesus Christ. Now, I do have fellow elders. We have three elders in this congregation. But in the sense of us three elders, two of them are allotted to my charge, and I'm held in the right hand of Jesus Christ.
So basically when I become a pastor, while I am allotted to you now at this very moment and throughout my training,
mm-hmm.
eventually I will no longer be allotted to you once God has put me, put others allotted under me.
Correct.
In a local assembly.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly how that works. Okay. Great question. Just hold on to that for now. Oh, bring it over to Warren. Warren's got our next question. Mm-hmm. He's also watching the camera, so he's doing double duty. It's probably best if we keep him there and have the
back
camera.
Back to the viewpoint of the pulpit committee, then. The pulpit committee has to decide on this question of whether the individual is a shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And then whether he is their shepherd.
Yes.
were it me on the pulpit committee, then I would be asking questions of the candidate that would encourage him to talk about various subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to if I were interviewing somebody for a job. If you are talking to somebody who claims to be a systems engineer, for example, a few pretty easy questions can get the person talking about enough about things like requirements development and management or high-level testing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And not that he will get every answer correct or be able to fill in the blanks on a quiz, but that he is able to converse on a particular subject with mm-hmm. some intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So you get past the resume, you get past the degrees pretty quickly by asking some questions. Now, of the pastoral candidate, I might say to the person, okay, take these six verses in Ephesians from the Greek New Testament, read them out loud to us, mm-hmm. And parse them for us, you know. And it may not be that the person is going to get every paradigm correct
mm-hmm.
as he does that, but can he talk about these things without fumbling around?
Right, right. Well, as you hear him teach, if you hear him teach 6 times, 12 times, 20 times, then you get a sense for what is his capacity with Greek and Hebrew. What
exactly.
is his capacity?
Yeah, you can. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it helps. The toughest thing of all is just bringing in a cold call, a total stranger off the streets, or a recommendation from a friend of a friend kind of a thing. Ultimately, our transition here went very well in 1994 and 1995 because this flock knew me, because I trained here. They saw me from 1990. They saw my very first message ever, and they saw 200 more before I was ordained. And then so there was no question when Ralph left. And so it's a lot easier if you bring up a man from within. Okay, you know, when David was out there watching the flocks, I imagine Jesse was out there first, and then little David was just a little kid, and you know, eventually the sheep learn who David is, and then when David goes out there by himself and Jesse's nowhere around, it's a natural, seamless change of command, if you will, natural, seamless shepherding handoff on that basis. Now, not every flock can do that, and so then they end up, because they're not training in-house, then they end up bringing in from elsewhere, and that gets tougher until you know who that person is.
Now I understand that we're talking about as far as the pastor and so forth and such.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is just to kind of flip it on its head a little bit. We know how to go about selecting a pastor or a shepherd, and about, you know, shepherds shall hear my voice. My question is, while we have the role of the shepherd in how he is to be toward his flock, do we have any biblical passages that show the flock in how to or not to respond to their shepherd?
Well, I think so. We just look at him. I think Hebrews 13, 1 Peter 5, John 10. I think we can use those same passages and look from the flock's perspective to the shepherd's perspective.
I meant from not choosing a pastor or a mm-hmm. shepherd, but once that pastor has been allotted
mm-hmm.
those sheep and they're under that pastor's authority, is there something that we could point to that shows how shepherds or sheep should not
mm-hmm.
Buck up against
1 Thessalonians 5, pastoral appreciation,
okay.
in verses 12 and 13 is right there. And then Hebrews 13, again, obey your leaders. And it's not a blind obedience. It's not a slavish, unthinking obedience. The obedience is a patho-persuasion obedience. And yeah, so there's plenty of passages there that relate to that, which, by the way, I think is why there's a great rebellion against that in our generation. And there's a desire for no authority in a church. And there's a lot of the home church movement is gaining a following, because they just kind of have a home fellowship, and everybody can kind of stand up and share a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then they can pray and leave, and there's no authority they have to submit to, and that is very appealing to a certain mentality that resists the ordinance of God, that resists the authority that God has put in place. And so, not shocking to me that that's a trend, has been since about the late 90s, has been really thriving in the home church movement. Yeah. and they act like, ooh, it goes back to the first century, it goes back to the book of Acts, it goes back when they all met in homes, and nobody had a church building back then. It's because, yeah, it was illegal, and they were thrown to lions, and I don't see them trying to incorporate that into their new traditions. But anyway, that's a whole different sermon right there. Al, I'm going to give you the last call, and then we're going to close them. And I'll take any additional PMW-specific questions. Are you excited to start Geisler next week?
All right. Yes.
All right.
Again. My question comes from the analogy of the flock and the pastor leaving the 99 to search for the one that's lost. Are we going to be well acquainted with how far that reaches in our culture? Is culture even a factor there? Or, from my perspective, what I've observed is that, you know, grace sometimes means an application. You don't want to be led here. You don't want to be, part of this flock. You just go somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, that's a topic.
How far does it reach in our training?
Yeah, we taught that at great length in the Life of Christ series because that was a message Christ delivered. And so you can get that from the website on the Life of Christ material out of the notebook. But just the short answer tonight, there is the good shepherd and then there is the under shepherd. So there's Jesus and there's me. And one of us is omnipresent. And it's not me. And in terms of leaving the 99 to go out after the one, is he neglecting the 99? Are they in danger? Because he's abandoned them, he's left them unattended while he goes out hunting after the one. See, now, somebody that's monopresent can't be in two places at once, and if I'm chasing people that are long gone, then I'm neglecting the people that are here. And so in my conviction, the imperative is shepherd the flock of God among you, right? Not the ones that have departed and are out there lost on the track and so forth. But the good shepherd is the one that can reach them. And so my shepherding then can become prayerful. It can become intercessory prayer. It's like true evangelism, only it's true shepherding. I get to cooperate with Jesus Christ and his shepherding because it's the good shepherd that's going to go out there and bring them back. And as far as that goes. And that's how I taught it when we were in the Life of Christ series on that. And that'll be a part of our curriculum related to that. Yes, sir?
I just have a real quick comment. I don't know if you knew this or not, but when you asked if excited about PMW classes. A couple of years ago, the very first person I had any interaction with here at Austin Bible Church was Doug, and did it via Facebook. And he told me about this phenomenal church I've never heard of somewhere in Austin, Texas. And the very first thing when he told me about Austin Bible Church, he told me, he goes, and they have these PMW classes. And he left it at that. And I think he did that intentionally to see my interest because I responded to him, what are PMW classes?
Right.
So I fell for the bait and he goes, here. And he sent me a link. And so, and I think you were in the middle of maybe like lesson 50 or something like that. And I bought that single volume, Make You Blind. So I have been looking forward to PMW classes, at least being here personally for 3 or 4 years. So
right.
I'm very excited about this.
Excellent. Well, this is the text. If you don't have it, and there's going to be a delay in getting it. I mean, typically Amazon can get something to you by tomorrow if you want it. But if there's going to be a delay and you don't think you can get it before next Sunday, let me know, because we can get you a loaner copy from the library, from my library. There's other means by which we can get the material to you just for reading purposes. I can even give you a PDF of chapter 1 if you need that. Just make use of that until such time as you get your own book. That's easy enough to do. I can export a PDF. So we're going to start next week with volume 1. So have chapter 1 read before you get here next Sunday night. Before Sunday. Okay, don't try to read in between 7:15 and 7:30. You need much more time than that. Even between Sunday morning and Sunday evening. Read it during the week. Have it done by Saturday so that you're competent on the material And we're going to go through the chapter one introduction, which is in part one, prolegomena. Okay, volume one has a prolegomena, it has a bibliology, and we'll work our way through the 12 lessons chapter by chapter. So before you come next week, make sure you've read chapter one and be prepared if we have a quiz ready to go. And like I say, the MP3s are just sitting there. So go listen to the class from last time, or go to YouTube and watch the video. And after you read the chapter, go watch the class and listen to the questions that were asked last time we did this, okay? Because, you know, we've done this before. And then come prepared with your questions, and we'll be able to field those next Sunday night, okay? Father, I thank you for tonight. I thank you for your faithfulness. I thank you for this time together. And I look forward, Father, to the coming weeks as we work our way through Geisler. And as we supplement Geisler, Father, there's things that were explained better in Schaefer, that we may refer back to Lewis Berry Schaefer. There are things that are explained, most of them, Geisler's an easier read. But there's things that were better with David Cohn in the New Covenant, for example, Father. So we're going to assign a supplementary reading in that text alone. And Father, just give us wisdom as we move forward, as we grow. Help us to search the Scriptures and see if these things are so. None of these men are God-breathed and inspired or inerrant, and they're going to differ in some things from how we teach here. And so just equip us, Father, to see those differences and to have our eyes open to what those differences are. And Father, I just thank you again for the new format we have for the 6 o'clock hour. I thank you for the resumption of the 7:30 hour and for all that you do, Father. Thank you for being faithful. I thank you and I praise you in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.